This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a gel flex grid. The gel flex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the gel flex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Those opportunities, give yourself a chance to get easy baskets, and in a league where games are generally decided by two or three possessions, that can make a big difference.
Eric, good luck tonight. Have a great call, my man.
Thanks, guys. Take care.
That is Eric Hasseltine, Memphis Grizzlies Radio Network play-by-play announcer. Again, the Grizzlies hosting their preseason home opener tonight against Charlotte, 7 p.m. tip-off with Eric right here on 92.9 FM ESPN. You will be able to watch that one tonight on Bally's Sports Southeast. We'll get into the list. I want to remind you, the list is brought to you by our good friends over at Birdies. It's Memphis's number one spot for virtual golf, 493 South Main Street, Suite 101. I want to remind you that October is Golftober at Birdies. That means you book online, you can enjoy half off standard golf rates all month long. Now's the best time to book your holiday party or event at Birdies. Dates are already filling up quickly, so make sure that you book early. And also, if you reserve this month, you will get the Golftober rates, even if your party happens in November or December. Also, want to let people know, on Saturday, Birdies will be the official watch spot for the Memphis Maroon Club. That's the Mississippi State fan group. They will have their official game watch Saturday at Birdies for the Georgia game. 3 o'clock start on SEC Network. The game will be broadcasted in 4K HD on Simulator 1. So if you're a big Bulldog fan, good spot to go out and watch as well. Golf at birdies.com. Make sure you check out the membership options as well. $100 a month will get you 10 hours on the simulator. So that's a great deal. You also get more discounts and much, much more. Full details at golfatbirdies.com. When we come back, let's get into the list. We'll keep talking some Grizzlies. We'll also give you an update, if we have one, on the South Florida game. Also wanted to get into a few other things from the world of sports, perhaps maybe even a little Pac-12 discussion. We'll do all that next right here on Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex Grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex Grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age. Wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. MIDI clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. MIDI offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's join, M-I-D-I. com.
Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Greg Sankey and Tony Petitti. All right, Cobb, we have the long-awaited meeting of the Big Ten commissioner with the SEC commissioner today in Nashville. Ross Dellinger of Yahoo Sports has fired out some tweets from the media portion of their meeting. He said the following. Greg Sankey says the joint ADs did not make a decision on the college football playoff future format. Quote, our focus on future format comes after we go through the first cycle, not a lot of conversation about what ifs. On a joint scheduling partnership, Greg Sankey says, quote, we had real general conversations about what ifs in football and basketball and talked briefly about the other sports. Asked whether the Big Ten and the SEC controlled the future college football playoff format, Greg Sankey says, quote, not unilaterally, but, quote, they have a defined role. We have to be clear participants at the end of that conversation. We'll get into that in just a minute. A couple of the other things that I thought were interesting. Tony Petitti, when asked about Project Rudy, that's another one of the proposals that was this week introduced. We saw a lot of writing about it. It's another Super League concept. Quote, I've yet to see anything in any plan that we couldn't do ourselves. It's basically scheduling more good games and reorganize the way you play those games. Greg Sankey said on the potential sports model, quote, I don't think it's a coincidence that they ramped up their public relations scheme around our meeting. And I thought this one was also a very important quote into the mindset of these two leagues. Tony Petitti. The notion that college football is broken is not right. It's not broken. Okay, Cobb, so I think the general tone and tenor that I'm getting, I think I'm exactly right where I was basically the last, I don't know, 2 years. It's awesome that people are coming up with other ideas. A lot of these ideas, there's a lot of things that I like about the ideas. It just does not matter, because unless these two men are at the forefront of it, it's not going to really carry any water.
So why did they have to get together in a hotel conference room today to discuss this? This could have been an email, classic situation.
Certainly could have been a phone call.
my theory, Jeffrey, they wanted to see Jason Isbell at the Ryman tonight. And so they're like, hey, what are you doing? You want to meet up in Nashville on October the 10th? Sure. Yeah. Then we can have a press conference and talk about how we're doing nothing.
I think that's not a bad theory. I think it was 100% intentional. Like, all right, we're showing, like, it's cute. You can have all these ideas. We're just letting you know we're meeting. I think more than anything, it's probably, if you want to look at it positively, it's a way to establish some leverage in the negotiations of whatever the new playoff discussions will end up being. If you want to look at it maybe more skeptically, potentially a threat. Hey, this idea that you guys are going to like hold this down and you're going to make us fight for this, just so you know, like, we can go do our own thing. Like, I kind of view this as clearly a visual that they wanted.
Sure. Yeah, they're just meeting, going to puff their chests out. They're going to assemble the national media there to, you know, take pictures of them in unison, flexing on the rest of college sports. Honestly, though, I think that comes off as a little insecure. Don't even really think that's necessary, just because of how disjointed these other proposals are. You've got Project Rudy. You've got this thing that the Haslams are backing. There is no cohesion or unity within the alternative world either. And yet here, Greg Sankey and Tony Petitti are thinking, oh man, we got to show some force. Like, we got to get together and let everybody know that we're still in charge here, which kind of feels like insecurity when they could have, if they really had to discuss something, could have done it on the phone.
So I don't disagree, but if I'm playing devil's advocate, I guess the argument would be, if behind the scenes they feel like that they're getting a lot of pushback from everyone else, kind of making the strong stance of, just so you know what I mean? Like, if we're just talking about, if the scenario is everybody kind of acknowledges these are the two leagues that matter and we're all just kind of hoping to get some chair at their table, you know, even if it's just one. My instinct says, though, if that were occurring, that this is probably not necessary. To me, this feels clearly intentional, and these aren't really two guys that operate from positions of insecurity. And so that's kind of why, if I'm having to argue against you, that would be the side that I would take. You could also just tell me, like, it's, even if it comes across as like insecure, it's just kind of establishing dominance. Like, I think the real question is, why this was clearly intentional. Why was this necessary to me? Like, I think that would be the question that I have.
It's all about the optics, because they're basically saying, hey, we don't have a plan, but we have the concepts of a plan, to quote a famous American politician. That's what this feels like. This feels like Greg Sankey and Tony Petitti from the two most powerful leagues letting everybody know that they have concepts of a plan. I don't know. It feels rather pointless. I'm not sure. Hey, look, here's the possibility that they actually did make substantive decisions in this meeting today at Nashville, but they've got to go back to their presidents. They've got to go back to their ADs. They've got to get some finalization on some of this stuff before they completely tip their hand. Like, maybe they did come to an agreement over a future college football playoff format and the number of automatic bids that they want to have, and some sort of a scheduling agreement before, you know, between the leagues, but they want to make sure they got their I's crossed, or wait, their T's crossed and their I's dotted before they reveal that. I mean, if I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt, that's what it is. But as I'm sitting here seeing these remarks filter out from them at a hotel conference room, it feels like another pointless meeting of the minds, like we have way too many of in college sports.
I guess the other option would be, you do it in person so there's not a record, a paper trail, but like, it'd be different. Like, if there were emails and you don't want a paper trail, okay, but if you just have a conversation on the phone, is that on the record?
Yeah, I mean, in this way, you would think that they were trying to, you would think that they would be trying to send out a narrative from this. But from reading their remarks, I don't know what that narrative is, other than that, hey, all these other ideas that we're hearing about, yeah, unless we're signing off on them, they're nothing burgers. Like, so I think it's the simplest answer, which is basically just this is their way of signaling to the rest of the country that we run college sports, and until we decide something, all these other proposals are pretty much useless.
I would like to know if Sankey winked at the camera and said, you know what we mean after this. Ross just tweeted this a few minutes ago. Greg Sankey was asked about the perception that the SEC and Big Ten may separate themselves from everyone else. Quote, I don't think this perception is consistent with our conversations. You know what we mean.
Right. But
it seems like this is a, like, either a threat or like, just so you know, we can do this on our own.
Yeah. And ultimately that's an inevitability, I think. But what I hope is that the next iteration or generation of college sports, I hope there's some sort of a breakaway for football specifically. I hope the NCAA basketball tournament is preserved. I hope the NCAA baseball tournament is preserved. I hope there's some semblance of geographical alignment that returns to non-revenue sports. There just needs to be more common sense. And if they want to break off and start their own football super league, that's fine. You know, let them. But can we do it in a way that doesn't completely wreck the Olympic sports model that's worked so well in this country for so long? I mean, I hope there's some part of their souls that have the greater good of college sports in mind and not just the greater good of the TV networks.
Yeah. And like, I don't have the answer to this, but I wonder if the answer is no, simply because in the end, what matters the most for these conferences is having year-round inventory, essentially, for the TV networks. Because I think intellectually, it seems like most people are kind of cool with the idea of, all right, let football go be its own thing. And historically, hey, it's the one competition that the NCAA, there's a reason why you don't get the NCAA trophy that every other national champion gets when you win the college football championship. Like, it's not run by the NCAA. Like, they basically govern eligibility, and I mean, who knows what they do at this point, but I just wonder if, like, in the end, like, that's never going to be a part of it. But I mean, I suppose what you could say is, well, we'll break away the football rights for everything else, but then does that bring Title IX questions into everything? It feels like the answer to everything is, well, it would lessen the amount of TV money that they would get, so they're not going to do that, or everyone's afraid of a lawsuit.
Well, that's true. Everybody is afraid of a lawsuit. That's the one thing you always need to remember in these conversations. It's like, all right, how can we do something that we want to do, maximize our revenue without getting sued? Yeah, the Title IX concerns are real and valid, but if you spin off football into a separate entity, there is no competing women's football league with women's football players that would have to be compensated evenly. And then you can just have the rest of the sports under their own umbrella, where there is women's basketball, there is women's soccer. You know, you go down the list, pretty much every sport aside from football is played by both genders. So, I mean, is there a way legally to where you can spin football off into its own entity, sell it as its own product, and then you're not beholden to the Title IX concerns?
I don't know. Because if it becomes a for-profit entity, I would think the answer is yes. But like, this has always been my pushback to every white knight that calls for, you know, make them employees, everything. And I'm not saying that's a bad idea. Like, it's so obvious we need some type of structure. Like, this feels a little insane, with all due respect to Tony Petitti saying it's not broken. I think you and I would agree it's not broken on game day. Like, you can sit back, like, when we're going to watch all the college football that we're going to watch basically from 2:30 until post midnight, like, we will agree, like, yeah, this sport's still not broken. But there's this reality for me of, like, how sustainable is this? But to me, it's like, if this were truly run like a business, there would basically be big-time college football, big-time college basketball, and what, probably 20 women's college basketball teams? Like, if we're just talking about a true business.
Yeah.
Well, it's not that, and this is kind of where they struggle. It's like, the whole point of this is that the things that make money fund everything else. It's not a business. It's by definition, it is essentially taking this money so that everyone can have the college experience.
Yeah.
And so, like, in that world that you proposed, does everything become, everything else basically become club level sports?
Club sports. Yeah. I mean, I guess that's kind of the, but if you condense the geographical insanity of the conferences, you dramatically reduce costs. Let's say you got, instead of Tennessee being in a conference with Oklahoma and Texas for women's volleyball, let's put them in a conference with Belmont and Georgia Tech and Virginia Tech and other schools that are within an easy day's bus drive. So we're not flying the volleyball team halfway across the country twice a season. And those travel concerns are even more ridiculous in the other conferences. So I don't know. I mean, yeah, like... 50 years ago, all these non-revenue sports were nothing more than, quote, club sports anyway. But yeah. Now we've vaulted them to the place of where they're filling television inventory for the SEC network and the Big Ten network and the ACC network. So we've made the non-revenue sports into something that they were never supposed to be in the first place, which is a television product, which is, you know, an avenue for your son or daughter to get a college scholarship, right? Like, that's never what non-revenue sports were supposed to be in the first place. So I don't see why they have to cease to exist. They might have to exist with lower budgets. They might not get the top of the line nutritional aspects. You might not have the $14 million on-campus golf facility that was like we're seeing pop up all across the SEC. But like, okay, like you can still like, there's plenty of NAIA Division II, Division III athletes who still have a wonderful college experience competing in sports where there is no revenue coming their way. And they're operating on shoestring budgets. And I mean, you know, that's might be tough to take for some people. I don't think it means that volleyball and swimming and tennis have to go away. They just might not be reaping the gold mine of their football program's TV contracts.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, I think if you have to synthesize everything into like a bottom line, it's, well, this was never intended to make the amount of money that it does. Like, and I do also acknowledge, like, well, now that it does make the money that it does, like, it's not right for essentially everyone else to get rich off of it. But I just don't think you can realistically say with a straight face, like, I think game day and I think honestly, college football as a television product, it is not broken. I would agree with that. But to act like that this is not something that needs massive overhaul and like structure, like that feels very disingenuous.
Yeah.
Like there's no way you really believe that, right?
Yeah. It's broken. All right. I mean, look at what happened with Matthew Sluka, right? There's all the evidence you need. Like when you can be promised a dollar amount and then never have it come to fruition. And that's just the way that things are right now. And it's not right, but we're getting used to it. And maybe by us getting used to it, we're sort of numbing ourselves to the insanity of this model. But is it sustainable? I guess it's sustainable so long as the TV checks keep hitting.
Yeah. And what I keep wondering, and maybe the answer is, you know, as you pointed out, instead of tithing to your church, maybe everyone's just tithing to their athletic collective. But it's like, can you really ask in a long-term model your fans to fund everything while you're also getting these massive checks? Like that, it feels like to me, as long as you're winning, the answer is yes. And there's always going to be a handful of schools that will care more. But I just wonder, like, overall, can it last? And I'll be wrong. My instinct says at a certain point when you have one disappointing year, you're going to now have to start having the conversation in your family when your wife goes, Why are we giving $5,000 so that the Vols can get a third receiver? Like, we could have gone down to the Panhandle for that. Like, well, we could have flown to the Panhandle for that. Like, rented a nice house. Like, I just always like think like, do those decisions end up happening? And
yeah. Well, it's going to happen either way because revenue sharing is coming. That's what we know for sure via the Title IX lawsuit. The established precedent now is going to be revenue sharing, talking tens of millions of dollars for the top athletic departments every year, going to be going straight to the players, which is going to force them, regardless of what the future of college sports looks like, to cut some of the fat in their athletic departments. So you're going to see schools trim non-revenue sports. You're going to see schools trim, you know, 20% of their 50 associate executive assistant deputy athletic directors, right? There's a lot of fat that can be trimmed in college sports, and we're going to see that regardless of what Tony Petitti and Greg Sankey decide in their little hotel meetings. But I stand by my theory. They're going to the Jason Isbell concert tonight at the Ryman, and they just decided to meet up and have a little powwow beforehand.
Well, what I can't wait for, who's going to be the first school that sits there and goes, you know how we can trim a lot of fat? Instead of paying our coach $15 million, well, why don't we pay him $5 million and let's take some of that money that we need to save and then let's put the rest into player procurement. Like, I don't know who's the highest paid coach now. It's probably Sean Payton, I think. I think he became the highest paid coach. I think he makes roughly somewhere around 20 million. But think about that. I mean, what, the highest paid guy per year is 50 million?
Yeah.
Per year.
Yeah, so the players are making way more.
Yeah, the players make, I mean, the most expensive player in your roster makes double what your coach does.
I totally agree. If you're on the hook for $22 million a year in revenue sharing with your players, and you're paying your coach, in George's case, Kirby Smart, you know, $10 million or more, that's you know, you could be funneling that money to your revenue sharing, and then you got several million to fund whatever non-revenue sports you feel like funding, or it frees up your donors to not have to donate as much to the athletic department, and then instead go donate to a collective. So. It felt to me like a long time, like we're at a tipping point with coaching salaries. I don't know if that's true. Like, it's still going to be they're still going to be well compensated. There's still going to be a competitive market for coaches. But when you start going through your budget as an athletic department and that you now have to pay the players, when you're paying a coach, one singular coach, half of what you're paying your entire roster, that seems out of balance. I don't know that can really continue. And hey, look, if we're going to put a cap, as we're doing with this Title IX lawsuit, on the amount of revenue sharing that you're going to do, if you're going to cap it at $22 million, that's the most that you can spend on your athletes, then why can't we also have a cap on how much you're spending on coaches? I mean, because it's ridiculous. Some of these position coaches are making $750,000, and they have no real authority in their own offices. I mean, in what world does a $750,000 employee actually have no real authority in their office? And there are multiple assistant coaches on some of these SEC and Big Ten staffs making close to $1 million who don't actually have any say over anything. They just yell at the kids on the practice field. If a head coach asks them a question in a meeting, they'll answer it, but they don't have any actual influence on the operation.
No, I mean, and to your point, like, name another world in which, I mean, I think some ADs now are making $1 million, but like, what's another world where the direct reportee, the head football coach, makes 12 times what an AD, you know, what the boss makes? Like, I mean, I get maybe if there's like purely commission-based sales, I guess, right? If you're like a manager of a sales team and you pay your people purely commission, maybe those guys could end up making more. Like I guess there's probably some, like, you know, there's probably financial jobs where, you know, if you're selling like that, like, maybe you can make more than the manager, but usually that doesn't even work that way.
But okay, so here's what I wonder. Let's say the Big Ten and the SEC do break away. They start their own Super Football League, whatever. Would that mean that Sun Belt fans, Conference USA fans, would no longer be interested in the football played by their teams and their conferences. If, well, they, you know, we're now officially second tier. Not that a Sun Belt team or a Conference USA team could ever win the national championship before, but there was at least this illusion of being on the same FBS playing field as the big boys, right? And that was probably worth something. But like, do you all of a sudden, well, you know, I used to be an Arkansas State season ticket holder, but now that there's this Big Ten SEC Super League, I don't know that I want to go to the games anymore.
So I'm with you on the Sun Belt. I'm more curious about Conference USA because Conference USA has really kind of lost its identity. Like the Conference USA is kind of like right now poor man's AAC, where they've been rated so much that their backfilling has just kind of been based on convenience. Where the Sun Belt, in my opinion, deserves credit, we're not very far along. We're not very far removed from a time and place in which the Sun Belt was at best equals with Conference USA, but probably a notch below. But where I think the Sun Belt deserves credit, when they started expanding, yes, they did make the footprint bigger, but I think they did it much more strategically. Okay, we got our traditional Sun Belt schools that are going to play their rivals and play the teams that they care about. We're going to put them in the West. And then we're going to kind of expand up to Appalachia. And yes, we're going to have teams that are regional fits. And then we're going to kind of meet in the middle. And to me, that's what makes sense. So I don't, I mean, my guess is you're correct because you're always going to care about your school. One thing that I do wonder about, though, is as we get further and further removed from first-generation college students or second-generation college students, like with each passing generation, it feels like college has become more transactional. Like it's mm-hmm. not like that you and I had bad college experiences, but we have far less romantic notions of our college experience, I think, than even the previous generation, because I think to a certain degree, it's like college just became like the next thing you do. Like you go to high school, then you go to college. And so it became more of a transaction rather than like some type of like romantic achievement or something that you're truly attached to. Like if you're a first generation, like I think technically my dad's dad through the GI Bill, I think I got a degree from Maryland, but like he didn't go to college. But for the most part, my dad, his brother, and his sister, like the first people that went to college. So they kind of have a deeper attachment, I think, than our generation does. But, you know, I don't know. Like that's kind of, it's like, that's a theory, but like only time will tell them that.
Yeah. So does it really matter if there's a breakaway? That's what it comes down to for me, because yeah, it's there's less of a personal relationship with your alma mater now. I mean, we see it even now, right? Like we see Memphis fans who also cheer for a certain SEC team. I mean, that's
sure
not always the popular thing to do, but, and that's even way more prevalent throughout the G5, the FCS. Like,
well, a lot of my buddies wanted to go to like ACC schools so they could still root for their SEC team.
Sure. Like, you know, like my parents, they went to UT Martin. Well, like,
hey, I'm looking for
too. UT Martin Skyhawks scores on their phone.
They were Pacers, like,
you
then.
Know what I mean? Yeah, the Pacers, right. No loyalty there. You know what I mean? So it's like these lower tier schools, the NCAA tournament is great, but like, is there any real harm done when they break away? Now, when you talk about Memphis in particular, it gets real dicey.
Yes.
Right? Because they are teetering on the brink of being part of the next thing or maybe not being part of the next thing. Right? And so when you have an athletic department like Memphis that has the backing, has the support to be a part of it, and then they're left out potentially, that's where it could be a very unique situation for the Tigers in particular. And I get the angst there. But by and large, I mean, if we cut some of the fat from the FBS, man, ain't going to break my heart. Like we talked about how ugly these CUSA games are right now. Like, yeah, I mean, they're on, whatever. I'll watch them. But I don't know that college football as an entity is just going to lose its soul if Jacksonville State is no longer eligible for a traditional bowl game or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, so like I kind of lose me when you get to that point.
Yeah. Side rant to your very point. Something that I'm completely out on: the coaches bitching and moaning about fans leaving the CUSA game when it's 55-0. Or leaving the MAC game. Like, I have no time for that. You want everybody to stay in, schedule a better game. But you're not going to do that because you want to get your wins. And you want to get your stat games. No, it's about funding these programs and whatnot. It's like, no, it's not. Like, it is for them. It's not for you. Like, you're not doing this right out of the kindness of your heart. You're doing it to get wins. All right, yeah, we got to talk some Grizzlies. We got to take a break and talk some Grizzlies. We got to take a break. So when we come back, Grizzlies Hornets tonight. We got to talk some Zach Edey because Cobb and I probably had a difference of opinion at draft time. I have some concerns. We'll talk about it when we come back right here on Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. This month is Golftoberfest at Birdies. That means if you book online, you can enjoy half off standard golf rates all month long. Now's the time to book your holiday party at Birdies because if you book now in Golftober, you will get the Golftober rate even if your event happens in November or December. Also, if you're a golf instructor in need of a facility to carry on your lessons throughout the fall and winter months, DM Birdies at Birdies901 on Instagram for all the info on how you can start using Birdies as your instructional facility that can benefit both you and your students during the off season. Also, going on this weekend on Saturday, when the Mississippi State Bulldogs take on the Georgia Bulldogs, the Memphis Maroon Club will have their official watch party Saturday at Birdies, 3 p.m. They will have the game broadcasted in stunning 4K HD on Simulator 1. GolfAtBirdies.com for more information. Follow them on Instagram at Birdies901. Cobb, this was something we talked about during the summer when we were debating what the Grizzlies should do with their draft pick. I had come to the conclusion, I think, like a lot of people, honestly, I kind of just got down to the UConn thing. It's like if they could get either Klingon or Castle, sign me up for that. If that was not going to be possible, I'd made peace with Zach Edey. And through summer league, even though it was a short time, wasn't a long time, but I thought it was a good time. We had Monday night, and with all the caveats of preseason, whatnot, I was a little concerned on Monday because in the back of my mind, I do acknowledge, like, it's not a slam dunk this works, but one of the questions would be, when the game speeds up at the highest level of the NBA, how's he going to be able to equate himself? Small sample size, also a bad matchup with Lively, but he gets 5 fouls, and I thought at times the foot speed was a problem. Now, I will also point out, I did feel like when he wasn't on the floor offensively, it was bad for the Grizzlies, so there is going to be kind of a push and pull. I'm not pushing panic button, but I am willing to acknowledge, like, I would like to see some reassurance tonight.
Yeah, well, you can't be counting fouls in a preseason game, man.
Well, in fairness, as Calkins pointed out, he's not used to that. They never call it.
Yeah, he never. That's true. He got a really nice.
He didn't know what to do.
What? A really nice whistle in college ball. Okay, so no, I don't see any reason to be panicked about Zach Edey. If the Grizzlies had it to do over again, would I prefer that they had taken somebody else? Yeah, probably. But I've kind of talked myself into it.
That's what we do.
A pretty large degree here. It'd be interesting tonight to see how he looks offensively without Ja Morant, you know, on the floor. How does Zach Edey sort of factor in? But then also you mentioned the foot speed and the quickness and all that. I thought getting up and down the floor, he actually looked pretty good. He looks like he's in phenomenal shape, which he's got to be because as we talked about with Eric, man, they are playing at warp speed. So Zach Edey being 7'4", that ain't easy. Like I used to remember like seeing Jonas Valanciunas just huffing and puffing up the floor, you know, and it's like, dude, he's in good shape for a 7-footer, but that still looks hard. So I think you got to get Zach Edey a little bit of time to get used to the conditioning element of what it means to play Grizzlies pace in the NBA. I think once he does that, he'll be fine. And also think about this. When he was at Purdue, he couldn't foul. Like it would, their entire yes. system was designed around him being on the floor. So he had to be conservative defensively. Here, they want him to be aggressive protecting the rim and in the paint defensively. So I think it's natural to assume that he is probably going to pick up some more fouls.
I also think it's fair to note, I think he's going to be a much better defender when there's Jaren on the floor with him.
That's a nasty duo in the front court. But where I get concerned is when neither of them are on the floor defensively. Are we going to run with Brandon Clark at the five? I mean, he is undersized, and that to me was worrisome when obviously Jaren didn't play in that first preseason game, and then when Zach Edey came off the floor, it's like, oh my gosh, they don't have another big. I mean, Jay Huff's on that two-way deal, but there's nobody who can bruise, nobody down there with any real girth to him. I mean, that's a worrisome situation for me, because there are going to be moments where even if everyone's healthy, you don't have Zach or Jaren on the floor. What's your plan in those moments?
I think even if you are someone, I think almost everyone universally is pro Brandon Clark. He seems to have a pretty high approval rating. Santi is kind of more in the, I don't even necessarily know if he has a negative opinion rating, but I think a lot of people are just kind of like, eh.
You know. Yeah, I like Santi. No, I just don't know that he's your paint enforcer.
When you have them on the floor together, I don't think that works very well.
So you're saying like BC and Santi as like your
backup front line? I think when you have BC, and Jaren, I think it's proven that it works pretty well, because like they kind of pair pretty well. I just don't, you get very, even though Santi's tall enough, it's like you get really small in the front court at that point.
Yeah, there's a part of me that wishes they had some run-of-the-mill, like veterans minimum five, like a Bismarck Biyombo or somebody like that who could just go be big for 10 minutes a game, 55 games out of a year. I don't know that they have that guy on the roster. It's a bit piece, small concern in the grand scheme of things, but that was definitely something that was noticeable to me when Zach Edey was off the floor and you don't really have another big. It's like, all of a sudden we are real vulnerable down there.
And it's fair to point out the Grizzlies have two roster spots open. One presumably is going to Scottie Pippen Jr. He's going to get moved up to a full roster deal.
He looked good the other night.
I think I know they're different players, but like in terms of getting production, like I think you can dream that you could get something close to what you got out of Tyus from Scottie. Like
that's a nice dream. Yeah.
Like I don't think that's insane. All right. We got to take a quick break. When we come back, we tell your story next right here on Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9 FM ESPN. All right, Kyle, for today's Don't Tell These Story, Tell Your Story, I got to go to Joe Goodman of AL.com about Kalen DeBoer's dressing on Saturday. I mean, have you seen this guy on the sidelines? First, it was the hoodies, and on Saturday, it was a bargain bin shopper's blue light special. They say that clothes make the man, and I'm not sure that's true, but the clothes DeBoer has been wearing during the game kind of reflects the style of football at Alabama recently. Sloppy. Not only did Alabama lose 40-35 over the weekend, but DeBoer looked like Cousin Eddie won tickets to the Bama game at the last minute. What's next? Cut-off jeans and a Keystone Light tank from 1983? This is the capstone we're talking about here. But does DeBoer still think he's coaching out West? That's a good take. I am all in on that take.
I need to see Kalen DeBoer in houndstooth and a full suit.
Yeah, with dress shoes, not coach's shoes.
And a tie.
Yeah.
And a tie.
Yeah. That'll get him. South Carolina's got no chance. Want to thank David for being with us. Also, Eric Hallstein, if you missed anything, it'll be on the program shortly after it'll be on the podcast shortly after the program ends. For Dennis, for David, this is Jeffrey saying thanks for listening. Keep listening. The Gabe Kuhn Show is coming up next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be to be.
Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.